Those are still in the freeway.
Yeah, right. We have one bill before us today, and we're going to get an update on the progress of this bill from Dick, and then hear from some of the folks involved in helping to negotiate that. Director Harshenko from the Revenue Department and Ray Wilkerson from OFIC. But first, I'd like Dick to explain what the issues are and where they are now. So I'll open a work session on House Bill 3575. And I actually personally am very happy to see this amount of movement occurring on this bill. This is certainly one that many of us have been concerned about for several years. And so to see that it's making progress. And Dick, would you give us some updates?
Yeah, I'll give a rough overview today because I saw the bill really last night in the draft that's before you, so I'm not totally up to speed on it either.
Rather thick.
Basically, you're dividing forest land owners, I guess, into four groups. One would be those that harvest timber, but they're not classed as forest land, which is the same group we dealt with in 2452. The remaining forest land owners, where the land is classed as forest land, you're dividing it into forest land that's owned in ownerships of 5,000 acres or more. Okay, so if the forest land is owned by a person, and that person or corporation or group of people that are associated, where each corporation has a majority, where the person has a majority interest in a corporation, you sort of get a definition of common ownership. And so where they're related, brother, sister, that type of relationship, or where the corporation that's the person is a majority owner of the corporation, you get a group defined then of common ownership. And where that's over 5,000 acres, it's mandatory that they be assessed under this new program. For those that don't meet that standard, so that the common ownership is less than 5,000 acres, they have an option. So then you're dividing that group. They can opt to be taxed under the provisions of this bill, or they can continue under the existing 80, let's call it the 80-20 program to keep these things straight. And then by that I mean that 80% of the tax is presumably collected in the severance tax and 20% in the property tax on the land. Starting with the large group and the owners who have 5,000 acres or more, what the bill does eventually is move them to complete exemption from the privilege tax and to 100%, or to being treated like all other property essentially under the property tax, so that the 100% of their assessed value is on the tax roll, but the assessed value is computed under Measure 50. So you basically go back to 1995, take 90%, and allow maximum assessed value to increase 3% per year. There are a few other changes here in terms of the way in which the forest land is valued. You have in statute essentially the values by site class, by productivity of the land, from FA to FX, I think it is. Those are indexed. It's now based on a log value index. This bill changes that so that it's, I think, based on a lumber price index. And through that, a new definition for Western Oregon, which is immediate harvest value, comes out. And anyway, you move in two steps to this final solution. The first step is that the land would go on at 75% rather than 100% of its assessed value. And then the final step, it would move to 100%. And the privilege taxes are blank in the book for the, in the bill for that 2-year period. The intent is to put privilege taxes in that will maintain the same amount of revenue from timber during that, from forest land, accepting the loss that we've estimated for 2452 in terms of harvest value from non-forest land. And we need to determine what those rates are.
Okay.
Basically, the program is similar for owners of less than 5,000 acres that opt to be taxed under the bill. And those that continue under the 80-20 program basically are treated the same way that they are now. The summary here says, and I need to go back through the bill, but the summary says that at the end of 4 years, I think it was, or anyway, in 2002, everyone is forced, yeah, remember that now, forced into the new method, the 100% valuation, but there's still an option for small owners to elect out of that and remain under the 80-20. So it sort of puts the onus on them to make an election to stay under the 80-20.
Is that a one-time irrevocable on the part of whoever the owner is?
Once you make the election, it's irrevocable, but the opportunity to make that election, I think, continues on. So if you don't make that option, you can do it the next year and the year after. But once you've made it, you're in the program, and you can't go back to the 80-20.
So you could choose to be in the 100% tax category for 3, 4, 5 years and then say, well, I think I'll go back to the 80-20 program. Is that right?
No. But if you were in the 80-20 program, the first opportunity to make the election into the 100% is in the year 2002. If you chose not to make it at that time, you could still make it later. You can't get back into the 80-20.
Okay.
You can only go to the 100%.
Okay. So new purchasers, I mean, somebody sells the land.
Mr. Chair? On page 6 of the Dash 2, and I'm looking at this for my first time myself, but I think about that. this is the section for election on property that's less than 5,000 acres. And on page 6, line 3, forest land subject to an election shall thereafter be assessed without regard to a change in ownership.
Okay.
So if you held 5,000 acres and you sold half of it, it wouldn't matter. It would still be treated as a 5,000, as a parcel within an ownership of 5,000 or more. You know, you now only have 2,500 acres.
Mm.
It's still treated. Once you're in the program, this 5,000 acres is decided. The ownership is decided, I think, 1-1 of 2,000. And that criteria, once you're identified as being in an ownership, you remain, once the forest land is identified as being in an ownership of 5,000 acres, it's treated the same if that changes.
Okay.
Now, if you are a person and you have 5,000 acres of forest land, and you acquire a new parcel of forest land, which is under 80-20, then it has to go to this program as well. You can't continue to hold that as an 80-20.
Okay.
Some of the other aspects of the bill, as I said, the privilege tax is, we haven't determined the rate yet, but it's phased down over a period of years, and I think that's one of the things that's still in the process in terms of how long that phase down takes place in the bill. I think it's just two steps. The forest land values that are in the, there's some concern right now with appeal that the real market values of forest land are less than the, than what they're being assessed at. And so the bill does call for a study for the Department of Revenue to do a study of forest land values and to try and set up an appeal procedure for people generally so we can maybe stay out of a rat's nest of legal action with respect to values. The distribution of the privilege taxes, now we have about, I think, $4 million in a reserve account right now for Western Oregon, and some amount of money that's being held by the county treasurers in Eastern Oregon. And the Western Oregon Timber Tax Reserve account will be essentially disbanded. Well, changed. The nature of its operation will be changed so that it's not a fund from which you can supplement the distributions to make them exactly equal to offsets. That's the way it works right now. The money that's in that fund will be, there's money will continue to come into that fund from all forest land owners for through 2002, assuming the privilege taxes in the phase-in are above zero. And that money that comes in from the 5,000 ownerships will go into the state general fund and be dedicated to schools. The money that comes in from people under the 80-20 program will be distributed 65% to the state general fund and 35%, I think, to the counties. Now, currently the distribution goes out to 2,465 districts. But a lot of districts anyway. This bill would have only two distributions from that account, one to the 18 counties in Western Oregon and the balance to the state general fund. And now the $4 million is currently on reserve. Some portion of that that's not needed to meet offsets for this year would be, again, distributed. And I think that's the same distribution, 65% into the state general fund, 35% to the county. That's about all I know about the bill.
Okay. You lost me just on one point. You said there are four groups of owners described. Those who harvest trees that are not on forest land, which is 2452. Those who own forest land greater than 5,000 acres. Those who own forest land less than 5,000 acres.
And I've divided that last group. I've divided that last group into two. Those who opt into the 100% program.
Okay.
And those who opt to remain under the, or who don't make the option and remain under 80-20.
I was missing that last group.
Yeah.
Okay, Ray and Elizabeth.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. We're here to report basically on progress, but as you noted, the draft amendments are thick. And as I believe I reported to the committee when I reported on the forest land taxation task force, that one of the things we learned was that forest land taxation is extremely intricate, complex, and has lots of little parts, and you move one over here and something goes boom over there. So what we're trying to do is work through the big block issues that need to be addressed this session. Government's office has asked me to help in any way that I can, and so I and my staff are working directly with OFIC and small owner representatives to try to work through what needs to be in the law today. We will be back with refinements. You will see as you go through these amendments that there are three directives to the department to do some interim work and to come back with recommendations. One of those is a fairly big piece, which is how the small owner election to stay in a system that allows them to pay most of their tax when they cut, how that will actually work. And so during the interim, we'll be sitting down with small owners and continuing the work that we started this interim to see if we can't find a simpler way to allow that flexibility for those owners, but not have it have to happen in such a labor-intensive and data-intensive way as it happens today. Another one is, as Dick noted, the issue of making sure that we have an appropriate set of land values. Right now, the statute has 8 land classes that cover the whole state. And as long as we're in a situation where most forest land is assessed at 20% of those statutory values, that works. But the idea of moving toward 100% of some value base for taxation of forest land may require more more diversity being reflected in those tables. And so the plan right now is for industry to sit down with the department and to bring in some outside expertise and see if we can't work through and come up with a recommendation for the 2001 legislature for what the land value base ought to be in the statute. And we've got some process that's laid out in the amendments. We are still working. There will be some changes to the amendment draft that you have today to try to refine still some issues around distribution during this interim transition period. The governor still needs to decide a couple of issues where he wants to settle down on a couple of issues, and so we're looking through that on an hour-by-hour basis. But it's looking pretty good for being able to come forward with a proposal for an interim phase, which would start this coming biennium and then coming back in 01 with the last bits of legislative change to implement the permanent change.
Great. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council. I think Elizabeth did a good job of summing up where we are. We are encouraged that there's not much left to do here, a few loose ends. We've had very positive conversations yesterday with the governor's office, and as Elizabeth said, those will continue today. One point I'd like to make is we are extremely sensitive to the pressures on you as a legislature right now to balance the budget for the next biennium, and we've obviously heard loud and clear from the governor also on that point, and we pledged to his office yesterday that we will make sure that for the upcoming biennium, this bill will absolutely be 100% revenue neutral. And the reason I mentioned that, when Dick was given his summary, he mentioned that it would be revenue neutral except for the non-forest land piece, which is the double tax issue that we dealt with in House Bill 2452. The governor's office yesterday asked us if we'd be willing to accommodate revenue neutrality for that piece also, and we said yes, we would. And I think the best way to do that, the simplest and fairest way to do that, is to the interim privilege tax rates that are blank in the amendments right now could be adjusted upwards slightly to compensate for that. So the folks who are being double taxed right now will get relief immediately. Essentially, the rest of the people in the program will subsidize that, and that's fine because that's the right thing to do. So that is probably the most important element we understand as to maintain revenue neutrality for the 9901 biennium. And then we're talking about, what happens after that. And I think there's several good arguments that we've raised and seem to get agreement on that it doesn't make sense to string this out for a long time, both from the department's perspective, from the governor's perspective, from our perspective. So I think we're going to settle on a fairly truncated glide path, I guess, if you will. So. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, that's good news about 2452 also. But, I assume that's probably the major reason that the governor vetoed it was the revenue issue.
I think that's right, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, are there any questions? Elizabeth, can we assume then also that since you are in real close communication with the governor's office that the resolutions that you represent at the table will be those that are acceptable to the governor, and he'll sign the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, the goal is to have an end result that the governor can support. And so I'm in communication as constantly as possible so that I have clear direction, and Ray has been in direct communication as well. So we're trying to really keep those lines wide open.
It sounds to me like the, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like the kind of the philosophical issues of how timber property should be taxed have been agreed to. I mean, we're sort of beyond that, and now it's into the implementation of the how do we go to that 100% ad valorem tax. Is that essentially correct?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that the governor flagged five issues for OSIC and for me to try to work through, and one of them was to address the problem that was raised by the smaller owners, that they need some kind of a system that doesn't push them to cut trees if they really didn't intend to cut them. And that was a big sticking point in the group. And the other was then the relationship between property tax policy and other policy issues and whether there should be a linkage or not. And only the governor could really sort of decide where he wanted to go with that. So what he said is that he's willing to do this kind of a process of having a transition as long as we can deal with the land value question, we can deal with the small owners issues, we can make sure that there's a no adverse impact in terms of revenue for 9901, and that the revenue impact that does occur as the permanent change is phased in is a manageable one. And so those are the things that we're trying to work out.
Okay. But the idea of 100% ad valorem taxation for large landowners is not at issue anymore as far as the philosophy is
concerned. No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, anything else? Well, we have this up for tomorrow, and I'm not sure if we'll have the final set of amendments. Do you have any expectation about that? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would just say one thing. We're working very, very hard with the governor's office, with industry people, and with your legislative council staff. And because of the complexity of these statutes and the desire to have the best possible set of amendments be presented to this committee so that we don't say, oh, my gracious, oops, and have to do something on the Senate side given the lateness of the session,
right.
We'll just have to keep your staff posted. And if we need a little more time, we'll ask. And if you can't give it to us, then we'll understand. But that we're trying to just have it be very clean when it comes out of this committee.
Okay. Well, then I would just advise committee members to sort of keep your ears open and see if there might be an updated posting for tomorrow that might say canceled on it. But you just keep us informed, and I'll move 2114 into Monday as well, or just make sure that it's posted for Monday. Is that what you were going to say?
Right.
Yes. Okay. Well, we have no other business this morning. Thank you. Thank you very much. Lord James.
Really exciting.